Howdy. This is a fuck.
Welcome to the fail.
No. I got this. All right. Welcome to the Art of the Fail. This is a podcast hosted by Christian Borgazan, co-founder of Bruja, and myself, Chris Buttonham, co-founder of Obi.ai. We chat with startups and entrepreneurs about their failures in hopes to uncover incredible lessons and unmask the stigma around failing today. Nobody likes this shit. Let's just get started with the show.
So for this season, what Chris and myself have done is we've brought on an incredible sponsor. And, well, to be honest, the main reason for that is because we're broke and we wanted more money.
Yeah, what do you think we do this for? Of course, you know, I like hanging out with you, buddy. I like hanging out with you. I like bringing on the guests, but we're entrepreneurs. We get with it, right? We got to monetize this bitch. So we brought on a kick-ass sponsor, Stones & Hustle. Stones & Hustle is the ultimate lifestyle brand for entrepreneurs and hustlers of all shapes and sizes. So if you haven't checked out the video podcast on YouTube, where you been, go there, okay? Go check out The Art of the Fail on YouTube, and then you'll see some amazing threads that we've been wearing all season long. We got t-shirts, we got hats, and you can get that and join the movement at stonesandhustle.com. Stonesandhustle.com, get your gear, join the movement, and keep hustling.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of The Art of the Fail. Super, super, super excited for today's episode and the guest. We have a very fascinating guest on today's show, Mark Bowden. Mark, thank you so much for joining the show today.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Kristen, you're Kristen, yeah?
Yes, I'm Christian, yeah. And then
right.
Chris is to...
I want to get this right. I don't want to fail at this.
Chris is to my right.
And again, we need to get those t-shirts. Christian,
get the t-shirts done.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So just a little bit of background before I go into the rapid-fire questions for people listening. Mark is he's a three-time author, a TED speaker, and also what's very fascinating that Chris and myself are really looking forward to digging into is Mark is actually a world-renowned body language expert, and so that as soon as I saw that and heard that, that kind of like made my eyes pop a little bit. So I got a feeling today's going to be a really good conversation, as always. And yeah, we're gonna have a good time. But before we get started on that, let's kick things off with what we once used to call rapid fire questions. Now just we call them Q&A because they're not so rapid.
Well, the answers don't tend to be as rapid, or you're not as rapid in your questioning. Who's been letting you down in terms of this rapid bit? Or are you feeling that I'm going to let you down? Where's it going to?
No. You know what? I don't want to put that on you.
He will inevitably fail.
I will inevitably right. fail at that. It's already
okay,
a given.
But I'm going to get wound up in this failure. Yes. And mess it up.
Yeah. I get
bought into this. So what I want listeners and viewers to know is, who's been failing in the past around this, so they know the kind of scheme of things. So if this doesn't turn into rapid fire, as it isn't now, we can't even get it off the ground.
Right. You see what I mean? Okay. We haven't even asked
but
one
if
question
if it goes
yet.
Wrong, has it been generally your failure or the guest's?
I'm going to go with mine because it's a recurring thing, so it's got to be on me. But Mark, I'm bringing you down with me.
good. I'm happy about that.
All
good,
right.
Let's go.
Let's get started. So first question, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Coffee. Just coffee.
All right.
And no breakfast.
It's funny because that sort of segues into my next question. Coffee or tea, and how many in a day do you consume?
Yeah, coffee, one coffee.
Just one? All right. Good on you. Are you an iPhone or an Android guy?
Android.
Okay. This is sort of like personal curiosity. How many speaking engagements have you been involved with in your career?
Well, I don't even count them. Don't even count them. Loads.
Okay.
Thousands, hundreds, not millions, but thousands.
Wow.
Probably into the thousands for sure.
That's incredible. What would you say was either your, this is probably really hard for you to answer. What would you say was your favorite one, or even maybe a couple talks that really stand out that you delivered and that you thought to yourself after, like, wow, that was really good? Or, you know what, okay, you're probably going to say all of them.
That, that broke up and it sounded like you said, what is your favorite wine? Well, I was like, what an odd, I don't know. Like,
you could answer that if you have a favorite wine.
I have to
wine.
Ask somebody else. But actually what you were asking was, what's been one of my favorite talks? There's I think is a really good TEDx talk that I did, which you can go and see, just watch on YouTube, put in Mark Bowden TEDx.
Yep.
I think that's really good. I think it's really good.
About the inauthentic.
Yes, okay. How to be inauthentic. Yeah. I think it's good because this is quick fire. Do you want me to talk about this or should we just
that's
pass?
You know what? We're already on it.
See what happens?
Let's talk about it.
Okay, because I don't want to mess up this quick fire thing. Oh yeah.
It's already
Mark
been messed
really
up.
Messed up the quick fire thing because he started into some story about his TEDx talk, some kind of self-aggrandizing kind of. I don't want to be part of that thing unless you say, "Hey Mark, I want you to tell
Mark go for it."
Go for it.
Thank you. So, I was a bit annoyed by the whole authenticity thing. I don't kind of get it. And I think it's a little bit corrupted and odd. So I enjoyed doing it because it was about being inauthentic and how important that is. And so many people have come to me about that and gone, yeah, you really hit the nail on the head about that. And it was a great, fun, entertaining speech.
So awesome.
There we go.
Awesome.
I'm going to dig into that after. Rapid
perfect.
Fire.
Yeah. is there someone that that you've either followed or sort of looked up to or like really thought like, wow, this person is a great professional speaker during your career?
There's a lot of people out there, but I would say in general, what I'm looking at is often other performers of all kinds of things, other artists, really. Mm-hmm. In that I'm not trying desperately to follow anybody else. I just kind of I speak about the subject I speak. I speak in the way that I speak.
Right.
And actually, what I follow more as something to emulate is a whole bunch of visual artists out there, or artists in general, who I think are. Doing something really interesting with the idea of authenticity and the idea of fake and the idea of truth.
Awesome. And all right, last question before we actually kick things off. Are you ready to get started?
Am I ready to get started? Was that?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. I don't know about you. I've been ready all the time.
Okay. You messed up. We're not always ready.
It's actually far from it. But
I thought we were doing it. Yeah. Whatever.
Wait. No. We're doing it now. We're ready now.
Okay. So Mark, one of the things I just wanted to start off with, I came up with it as you were sort of talking about the inauthenticity speech. And I'm watching you here on the video. You talk a lot about first impressions, and you talk obviously in the context of body language. How do you approach a video or a podcast, or maybe in the context of business or conference calls? How do you present yourself in that scenario? Because I know you've talked about different scenarios in the boardroom and things like this. What's unique about this, what we're doing right now?
Yeah, well, usually... when I do these, they're a lot better organized. And,
no doubt in my mind.
they're just better.
Yeah.
And so I've purposely really messed up today because normally I'd close the doors there on my office kind of shelves there, so you wouldn't see the. You know, all the accoutrements, all the stuff here, and I'd have put it. So I'm going to close that. I'm going to remedy that and close those now, because actually it annoys me from the back seeing all that kind of mess there. So
please
I'm just going to go and I'm just going to close that.
Yep, nice segue.
I'll be back with you in a second.
Yeah, all right.
But I can't stand the mess there. And then normally what I do is I've got these kind of big kind of posters of my latest book.
Yep.
And they would. Normally, like, hang up, like this kind of. like, like that. But, oh, but they God. Tend to fall down after a while. So I've not been hanging them up so often because they tend to fall down. I can't find a way to really stick them onto the glass. So that one's already gone. So I'd kind of purposely tried to make this whole thing a shambles.
Yep.
For you,
genius.
Well, that's what we do all the time.
I'm succeeding, but my nature is to have stuff kind of organized and to avoid the shambles, mm-hmm. avoid mm-hmm. the mess, because people make judgments about you based on what they first see. Right. So a lot of what I'd normally do in these podcast situations is make sure, you know, you're getting a better shot of me here and I'm not. I did try and avoid the shambles that happens when you're just using your normal, you know, laptop angle and you just, you know, see up somebody's nose
right.
during the whole. I've tried to avoid that because what I do is I get my recycling bin. You can see it's labeled.
Yep.
It's actually labeled, you know, recycle there. And I tip all the recycling out of it. You can see what I tipped it out here on the floor.
I'm loving this.
It's the only recycling bin.
This is good.
This is quality.
So I put that on top of here and then angle that and it all looks a lot better here. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. so I've purposely faked essentially ineptitude around around this, and now I'm getting a little more adept around it. There you go. There's my answer.
Awesome.
I faked it. Usually, I would try and stop all the fails, and I've just allowed some of them to happen today.
So, if you have like this much of your body in the frame,
yeah.
is there a better way to present yourself, or is there anything that you have to now mold to because you only have this much of you to show?
I'm trying to be very
self-aware. The more of me you can see within a certain tolerance, the more optimistic you're likely to be about me, especially if I'm showing you more of myself, showing you open hand gestures, this kind of thing here is probably going to make you a little more optimistic about me and how much you can trust me and so forth. So I could start with a shot like that and then get closer to you over time. You know, one of the problems with these podcast things is that you tend to end up looking at your own image down here.
Yeah.
Your brain's going, but what do I look like? Am I good? So my eyes keep going down here. And what I'd normally do to stop that failure, I'd normally have a whole bunch of post-it notes here, but I failed to have them ready. So I'm going to use an old post-it note, which has something else on it.
Yep.
And what I would normally do is get a big felt tip pen, use this one here. I'm just going in my pen drawer. And I'd put a smiley face like this. So this smiley face here, and I stick that above the camera, you know, little light. So it reminds me to look up there at the camera and smile at you.
Nice.
But again, I purposely failed to do this today, so I'm going to avoid that. And it won't be such a good podcast.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to end up, you know, inevitably looking at myself in this little corner picture. Yeah,
that and for many other reasons, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
What is there to look at in terms of you guys?
Exactly.
there's a nice sign behind us, so you can kind of just look through us if you wanted to.
Yeah, I can do that thing of just looking at the fail. It's like an instruction, isn't it?
Fail.
It's like a command.
Exactly.
Or just look at Chris. Yeah. That's the same thing.
Yeah. So, Mark, before we get into more body language stuff, which I'm super fascinated about, what we do like to always do with our guests is dig a little bit more into their past and their sort of journey from the start. So can you start at the very early ages? Where'd you grow up? What'd you do? Where'd you go to school? How'd you fall in love with what you're doing now?
Yeah, okay. Let's start at the start then. Where'd I grow up? I grew up initially in a place called Northampton, which is 60 miles up the M1 from London. So Northampton was going to be the capital of England at one point. I can't remember what year. It might have been about the 1100s or something like that. Unfortunately, it burnt down. and, and the whole town. Well, it used to happen to English towns at that point. They just burned down, yep. All made of wood, full of flammable material, people walking around with fires and candles and all kinds of stuff. Inevitably, a town or a city would always burn down at some point. Northampton just managed to do it just on the cusp of becoming the capital. It then, at one point, was going to become a great university town, a bit like Oxford and Cambridge. But then the people running Oxford and Cambridge lobbied, I think, what would have then been Henry VIII of England, and said, look, just let's crush Northampton and, and make sure it never gets to be in Oxford and Cambridge. So what it turned out to be was the capital in Europe at one point of shoe production. So it was a great leather town. By the time I got born, it still had a bit of shoemaking capacity, but not much anymore. So to a large extent, it was a bit of a dead end town. And so I went to London instead, and studied there, and studied performing arts. In fact, studied arts in general, especially the ones which are performed in some way, which would actually be to a certain extent most of them. And I got really interested there in visual imagery and how the visual image affects the mind. What do we have to do with a visual image to tell a story and to convince, to con your brain into something being real that isn't real? How do we create these illusions for the brain which tell it that something is alive, maybe, that isn't alive? Like in animation, it's a great Latin word, anima, to make live something that isn't live. I got fascinated in that area, became really obsessed with it, and became fairly expert in how you trick people's minds into believing something is true when it's not true. Then people in politics and in business came to me and said, can you do this kind of stuff with other people that aren't in the entertainment world? And I said, yeah, I could probably do that. And then I started down this route of working with business and with politics and organizations in general, in terms of how they can use their body language to stand out, to win trust, to gain credibility every time they speak. And so in that term, I became an expert in body language and in how you...
There it goes.
See, exactly. That always happens. I don't let that happen normally. What I do to stop that, you know, what I've done, I don't know how to fix these things. Yeah.
Like,
if anybody watching this, listening to this, has got a way. See, what I've been doing, I've been using what I would call gaffer tape, what we call in England gaffer tape, because in the film business, this is what the gaffer uses quite a lot of. And,
duct tape.
And I've been turning, what you call it? You call it duct tape.
Duct tape.
And I've been kind of folding it over like that in order to make a kind of I don't know what you call that, but that's what I've been doing at around about 4 points on this. And it's very light, very light, and you would think that four or even five of these things would hold that up there. But no, not at all.
So, Mark, when you got into the politicians and business people started approaching you, you worked with some pretty big politicians, didn't you?
Yeah. I've worked with a bunch of people who run countries, who are prime ministers. I've worked with their oppositions. Wow. I've worked with ministers. I've worked with speakers of houses. I've worked with all kinds of people who have a huge responsibility to run countries. And what I've done with them is to help them get their message across. Mm-hmm. What do you do with your body, with the visual image, with the surroundings, with the whole picture that you're in, including yourself? What can you do on purpose that would cause people to trust you and also cause people to distrust your opposition, the others around you? Often you're trying to do stuff, yes, to make you look better. But what people don't understand is often you're trying to do stuff on purpose to make them look not so good.
Yep.
Isn't that real?
Yeah, it is, as you say, real.
Real.
And raw. Real and raw.
So then what was the move then? Because you're in Toronto now, is that?
Yeah.
So what brought you over here?
We came here really because we could. Mm-hmm. There was an opportunity here. It was a country that we hadn't lived in. We could live here. There was my partner Tracy, who's also co-wrote the last book with me, mm-hmm. Truth and Lies, What People Are Really Thinking. She originally is Canadian, and so we had the option to come and live here, and so we did. We gave it a try, and it worked out pretty well. When we first showed up in Toronto, it really wasn't very much, and over the last, I would say, 13 years that we've been here, certainly over the last 10, it has expanded and grown in an extraordinary way. And we kind of fell on our feet here. It was a great place to be. Canada, greatest country in the world.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So then after that, you sort of started doing more of your own entrepreneurial endeavors. Do you want to dig into that a little deeper?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I started a company called Truthplane, which is a communication training company, and using the techniques that I knew about in terms of how you use body language, how you use the visual image to ultimately decide the way somebody unpacks and deciphers and frames and makes up in their mind your verbal message, the meaning. So we make up our meanings primarily on the way that the message was delivered to us. The frame of the message is, I would suggest to people, the fundamental, the most important aspect of how we work out what something means. So I created a training company that would focus primarily on that. That's what I had expertise in, but also that's what I knew had the biggest impact.
Right.
Yeah, and so that's Truthplane. You can find us at www.truthplane.com, and that's been my entrepreneurial world for the last, let's say, kind of 13 years or something like that. Now, before that, I had run a bunch of other companies. They were entertainment companies. Okay. I had the largest provider of English speaking theater to Italy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I had another company before that I'd bought, which was doing pretty much the same thing. That I dissolved completely. We owed a huge amount of money to the British government, and I decided that we weren't going to pay that.
Right.
And I bought the company. I bought the company.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Why pay the government? Yeah. I bought the company, and I knew it owed a huge amount of money to the government, and I thought I could turn it around. And it turns out when you owe the government that amount of money, it's very difficult to turn it around. And so I dissolved that company and left the British government very sad that they weren't getting their money, and started a new one doing pretty much the same work. And that was a huge success. So that was good.
So in that context, I know Christian's wants to ask the same thing I do. Are you willing to share any of
please.
The flame on that company, so to speak, that ended up in it maybe not the most ideal exit for you?
yeah sure. So it was a company that I loved, because I'd been working for it, I'd worked for it, and it was a great company, and everybody involved had a great time. Where you go, where's he going?
He's just gonna take a look at the camera right now. A message actually popped up on the screen, so we're making sure that it's either recording still or.
I mean, I don't mind what you do.
Yeah, he kind of just left.
A very sensitive story for me. Whatever you guys want to.
That's actually kind of rude, Chris.
Yeah, if you want to step out and do something else, That's cool as well.
How about that, though? He asks the question, and then he takes off.
Right, he asks the question, then he just disappears, just goes. Anyway.
Well, I'm interested.
You're interested, Chris.
I am.
Okay, you're
Chris
interested.
Might be, because he's coming back.
Oh, back again now.
All right.
Back again now.
I think he changed his mind.
Just through embarrassment. Just embarrassment.
It was a psychological experiment in and itself, was to see how you would handle it. Some guests, they just continue on their merry way, but No.
Normally I would, but I'm not going to on this podcast. I'm gonna you know, bring up every failure that happened.
And you've now understood the crux of what we're doing here.
Right, exactly. In fact, I'm not monitoring my body language. I keep having to rub my nose, which people will be thinking, oh, you know, he's lying about something. But they're not, because they're not very good at reading body language.
Why would I buy this clown's book?
Right, exactly. The guy can't even. So normally I'd take some antihistamine. So I don't do that on a podcast, but I didn't bother this morning. I've got a lot of allergies. I'm not used to this country. I'm from England. Yeah. This is Canada. I don't know what's in the air here. There's some kind of crazy pollen out there, but it kills me every summer. Anyway, so
it happens.
Didn't take my antihistamines. So I'm in this kind of allergy situation at the moment, and my body language will be a part of that. In fact, the allergy medicine will be dilating my pupils as well. So people will be going, oh, no, I can see his pupils dilating as well. Anyway, okay, so the company, I'd worked for the company. It was a great company, mm-hmm. really loved it. And one of the owners said, look, I've had enough of this. For various reasons, probably didn't tell me the real reasons. Owed huge amounts of money to the government.
Well, that's my question.
And so if I leave, the company will kind of collapse. It won't be able to do the work that it's going to do. And I was like, oh no, that's really bad. It's great work. So I said, okay, I'll buy your portion of it. I'll buy your partnership of it. And so I would be as a partner to his previous partner. In it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I did that. And then in about week two, the accountants came to me and they said, so you know, you owe all this money to the British government. I was like,
This is the part where the pupils start dilating.
No, I didn't. I didn't really. I mean, I knew there was, you know, a little bit of an issue. And they were like, no, there's really a lot of an issue with this, and that was very disappointing. Disappointing that this had not been really made clear to me. Disappointing that I'd not really investigated this as I should. And then disappointing that I thought, oh man, I'm going to have to try and turn this around now. And I'm not going to make the kind of money that I hoped I would have made out of it. I was going to kind of turn this around, make this more profitable, keep on doing the same work. It was all going to be great. And now I'm in this battle with the government. Anyway, what was great is, so we kind of worked through this for a number of years, but it was a bit of a draw. And it's never great getting those letters from, you know, Her Majesty. So,
right.
Saying, here's what you owe us. You owe us a whole lot more since we last told you here's what you owe us. And things aren't getting any better. And, you know, we're coming round to take everything. And you kind of go, I don't think you can legally do that. And they kind of go, yeah, no, maybe we can't. But we're going to keep asking in a very rough manner for you to pay up. Anyway, so it turns out there is something in your favor around this. In that my accountant came to me at one point and he said, look, how much do you really like the name of this company? And I said, well, this company kind of annoys me a lot now. So I'm not fond of the name. He says, look, all we need to do is you're a debtor. The company owes you money. The company owns me money and the company owns the government money. But if we put it together by parties, you and I are the largest, we're the biggest amount of debtors. There's two of us and one of them. Mm-hmm. And the law says if there's two of us and one of them and we strike our debt and then dissolve the company, there's nothing they can do about it. And I was like, yeah, let's just do that. That's
what a loophole there.
What a loophole. Wow. So that was done. And Your Majesty, I apologize for that, but I don't think you are short of a few bob.
Right. I think she's doing just fine.
Yeah. She'll manage. Yeah. She'll manage.
And she'll be all right.
Awesome. I have a couple questions here.
You're not just, you know, on Facebook now reading your emails.
He is actually.
I'm on your Facebook page.
Yeah, we're actually on your page.
Questions here, but actually my Facebook is more
interesting. Yeah, I got bored, so I'm on Facebook. So when you talk about the awesome TED Talk you did about being inauthentic and how much value you can actually get out of that, my question sort of that came to mind, and I'm sure you get this a lot, is where are the lines between being inauthentic, lying, and acting? And is there any challenge there for individuals to, you know, come to terms with that in their own morals or values and how they portray those traits?
Sure. So let me see if I can unpack that for you a little bit. So first of all, let's talk about lying, because it's a good opportunity to tell you that my new book, Truth and Lies, What People Are Really Thinking, is available in all bookstores. And the title, written with my co-author, Tracy Thompson, includes the word lies. So, lies. Let's talk about lies, first of all. Lying is one of our most important social skills. It's as important as being able to tell the truth. The important thing is knowing when to tell the truth and when to tell a lie. Just think for yourselves or anybody out there watching and listening, if you were unable to lie, would you be able to hold down many of the relationships you hold down right now? Now, of course, yes, you have to be able to tell people the truth as well to hold down those relationships, but you also need to be able to lie, and you also need to be able to lie very well in order for that to work. Those people you have relationships with, they also have to be able to accept lies as well. If you're unable to join in on the lie, then again, you won't be able to hold down some of the more complex relationships that you have with people. So I just want to take it to be taken as a given, though you could argue it, but you won't argue it with me because, you know, that's my thesis. I'm not here to argue my thesis. Yeah. Okay, but...
Well, we could try. We would just do a very lousy
job. Lying is one of our most
important
social skills. So we have to be able to lie. And so this idea of the body never lies, yes, of course it does. You fake body language all the time brilliantly in order to help you lie, to keep the fabric of your society together, and also to keep some fabric of your personality together, the idea about you that you have. So let's talk about the idea that you have about you, often what people call a personality and authenticity. And people always go, well, you know, you've got to be authentic, or they're not being. Well, let's start with that one. They're not being authentic. You don't know that. You have no idea. Mm-hmm. Authenticity is just an idea in your head. It's just a concept. It's just a piece of imagination. You imagine that they're not being true to themselves. But how do you know what the true themselves is? How can you make a judgment about anybody else? Here's what I guess. When you say they're not being authentic, that's just code for, I don't like what they did. I don't like it. And what you're not doing is going up to people and going, I don't like you. I don't like what you did. What you do is to go, look, I don't think they're being really authentic. So I got a real problem with this authenticity thing in terms of other people's judgments about authenticity. You have no idea. You are not a mind reader. You have no idea if somebody's being authentic or inauthentic. You just don't know. All you do is judging. And all your statement about their not being authentic does is tells me more about you than it ever would about that other person. So there you go. And now, how do you be authentic? Well, so there's a difference between authentic goals and the actions you might do to get to those goals. I know that you and everybody listening, you have things that you really truly desire, things that you really truly want, and you know you truly want them. That sounds a little bit more like authenticity to me. Things that you are authoring, things that you want written in your life, events that you want to be able to write and to happen in your life that you want. That sounds like authenticity. Do I know what those are? Well, you'd have to tell me what they are, because I'm not a mind reader. I just don't know. Now, how are you going to get those things that you want? Well, you could get them by being totally honest, or you could get them by being honest and lying a little bit, like most people get what they need, because they need to co-opt other people to help them get things, and to co-opt other people, you need the right combination of truth and lies in being able to do that. Now, that doesn't mean you're being inauthentic. Your goals are still there. But how you get to your goals, you're going to have to use the normal fabric of co-opting and cooperating with people. And cooperation involves not only the cooperation on the truth, but cooperation on the lies, on telling each other and others things that you know not entirely to be accurate, and still telling them it's accurate.
So
that's essentially what lying is.
So what you're telling me, what I'm getting, is that I've been lied to my entire life.
Yeah, and look where you've got. Not too bad.
No, not too bad. I'm okay with it. Keep lying to me.
Yeah, you've accepted the lies, and you're doing okay.
Yeah,
you're doing better than most people on the planet right now.
It's because we got a nice sign behind us.
You got a nice sign. You look at it. It's a the art of the fail. How is failing an art? That's a lie from moment one. It's not an art.
But Mark, our guests are cooperating with us in that lie.
We buy into that ridiculous lie.
I love
art. Like failure is a moment of purposeful self-expression.
Now we're going meta on the whole podcast concept.
Failure is not, nobody purposely expresses themselves through failure. Art would be, in my mind, art would be the purposeful expression of yourself. Yeah, nobody in life goes, I know how I'll purposely express myself today. I'll massively fuck up. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. The art of the fail. What a bunch of I'm joining in because I'm just trying to promote a book.
Exactly.
That's why I'm here.
Hey,
I can say truth and lies, what people are really thinking. You know what we'll do for you too.
We'll put it in the show notes for you as well. How's that? We'll make sure it's everywhere.
Yeah, that's awesome. What I really liked about sort of like the general purpose of your TED talk about inauthenticity was, this sort of default neutral perception we have of everyone around us, and how if you allow yourself, I guess, open to those truth and lies, then you have no idea what you could actually gain from interacting and actually accepting those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So my take on it is that we are by default indifferent to most people on the planet.
Right.
There's, 7.6 billion people on the planet. My brain is going to look at most people on the planet and just go, they're not a friend. They're not an enemy. They're not a potential sexual partner for me. So they're of no use. They won't harm me. They won't make anything better. Forget about them. And, that's the way I would suggest via my model that we are wired. And that can be a bit of a problem. That can be a bit of a problem for all of us as entrepreneurs who are trying to cooperate with as many people as possible in order to help build our idea, build our thing bigger and bigger and bigger, is that we've got to watch out for ourselves, because if we're authentic, if we're truly authentic about our actions, if we truly do what our innate physicality and mentality wish us to do, we will ignore most people on the planet. And that, I think, is a problem. So we need to be inauthentic, and we need to pretend, act, lie that we are interested in other people, especially the ones that we look at and we go, they are useless. They are nothing for us. Because if we do that, we stand the chance. If we can fake being interested in them, we stand the chance of getting closer to cooperating with somebody who holds abilities which are nothing like ours, because we gravitate to our like. We're designed to find people just like us, to find the mirrors of us. And that means I'm most likely to bump into a whole bunch of people who are already like me. They're an echo chamber for me, and therefore I can't conspire with others. I can't cooperate with others to be bigger than myself unless I find the people who are nothing like me. And they're going to show up in my mind as me being indifferent to them or enemies, or because they are so unlike me. There'll be this kind of tribal thing that goes on, which says they're so unlike me, they're a threat to me. I hope this kind of rant makes sense.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
And that segues me into what I'm super interested to ask you. And in the context of failure, what are some of the body language cues, maybe before, during, after, that represent failure? And how could one maybe prevent or mitigate that, particularly after the fact, obviously, in the case of failure?
Yeah, lovely. So, you know, I was looking at some videos the other day of professional mixed martial arts contenders, and for a website actually that kind of focuses on that, and they wanted me to look at the body language of people. Of the competitors and go, and these were the top competitors in the world, and go, okay, which one's going to win and which one's going to lose based on the body language. And so what I was looking out for, and I got pretty good results on that. Now, what I was looking at is in the face-off that they often do during the weigh-in, I was looking for who was minimizing their body language, who was taking up less space when they could clearly take up more space, and who was maximizing taking up a lot of space on that. So who felt they owned territory and who felt they were going to have to give up territory. And also I was looking at lip suppressors, these kind of things, which for me, I was going to take that as a good indicator that somebody might be anxious, nervous, that they're not going to perform to the best of their abilities. So I was looking for who's minimizing, who's doing lip suppression, yeah, and who's maximizing and who isn't doing that lip suppression. Just on that alone, I was getting, you know, there were a few that I weren't getting right, but the ones I wasn't getting right, I didn't know the backstory and I hadn't gotten enough data around what the backstory to the fight was, and there was too much going on in the background that would overwhelm any judgment that I was making. The rest of them I was getting right. So all of that to say, what happens to us before a failure, during a failure, after a failure, is we start to minimize, I would say, one of the things we do is start to minimize the amount of space that we might take up. Instead
so crossing
of allowing
our arms.
Ourselves, yeah, instead of allowing ourselves to take up more space, more room. Now, all of that to say, these are not absolute indicators, okay? This is not absolute at all. You have to take a cluster of information. What's more interesting for me is how could you use that knowledge yourself in order to start to create a world which fits your authentic goals a little bit more? Could you fake your performance in order to reach your authentic goal? And I would say, absolutely, yes, you can. Because I can choose to do body language that maximizes, or I can choose to do body language that minimizes. I can choose not to do lip suppression. I can choose not to, for example, protect my carotid arteries and windpipe. I can choose not to do self-soothing gestures like this before I go into an environment that I could potentially fail in. Or I can choose to countermeasure what that natural authenticity. I mean, if I'm nervous, if I feel that I could fail, then my body will want to self-soothe me, it will want to minimize, it will want to protect me. And I'm saying to my body, no, I'm not going to let you be authentic. I'm not going to let you do that. That won't help me. It'll feel comfortable for me. And again, with authenticity, people go, well, it just didn't feel authentic. No, you just didn't feel comfortable.
Right.
That's all. You just weren't comfortable. and life isn't comfortable when you're succeeding. Mm-hmm. When you succeed, you have to push past a barrier that mm-hmm. other people aren't able to push past.
Yep.
And so it's going to be painful for you. So don't take these comfortable positions and go, well, I'm just going to go in and be authentic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're mm-hmm. just going to be safe.
Right.
You got to take these positions that expose you more. Yeah, lay you open to more threat, to more pressure. It's going to feel uncomfortable. It may not feel like you, but what it's feeling like, what you're trying to be, is the more successful you.
Yep.
Yeah, the world is full of failure for you. Yep. The world is full of barriers. If the world wasn't full of barriers, we'd all have just what we need and what we want immediately.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, right now, you'd have exactly what you need and what you want right now.
Right.
What's stopping you? There's a whole bunch of barriers.
Yep.
The key is how do you get through those barriers?
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going to be, some are going to be more painful than others. Some are going to have been set up within systems that you think you have absolutely no control over. And you might be right. You have no control over those systems. You've been dealt into a really bad set of cards within a game that you can't control.
Yeah.
And it's really painful. And it's been painful for all the people who came before you. And it's going to be painful for you. And it's going to be painful coming. But the key is how you're going to manage that. Because we're all managing some kind of pain in some kind of way. And you can manage it partly by putting on body language that best helps you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that kind of like is that where that fake it till you make it saying has some merit. And
big time.
And to give an anecdote, I know I've talked to Christian about this before, but I actually asked you, Mark, a question when we met 3 or 4 years mm-hmm. ago. I asked you, or I told you I was petrified of public speaking and what could I do? I said that the one thing that I noticed was that every time I would speak right after, I would feel amazing. And you said, can you mimic the behavior and the body language that you have after the release, essentially?
Yeah.
And I never forgot that. And since then, I've done like dozens of talks and it never has felt super comfortable. But you, once you trick your mm-hmm. your body mm-hmm. into feeling that that sense of comfort, it's an amazing psychological formula that happens.
Yeah. So I love that. I love that. Great. Thanks for taking my mm-hmm. my advice. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad it's worked for you. It'd be a terrible podcast if you and you gave me this advice and I just
crashed and burned.
I was crushed.
Well, the reason why Chris actually wanted to get you on was because the advice was terrible.
Yeah.
So he wanted some retribution with you.
Exactly. So I'm glad you took the advice. Yeah. But again, I want to reiterate, there are a whole bunch of people out there who may have said to you, well, look, you know, you're nervous. That's you. That's authentic. Mm-hmm. You just got to go on with that.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
That might be true. But my worry is that also could make you spiral into hating it even
right.
more.
Right.
So you'd never be with us right now doing these podcasts with this ridiculous The Art of the Fail idea. You'd never be presenting this utter lie
to the masses.
You are to the masses as you are now.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't be having a great time.
Right.
Doing that. So right. I don't doubt that there's some other ideas about this of like, just go on and be the nervous you and people will love you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, I'm not risking that when there's way better interventions,
right.
which is put on the body language of what you want to be, because you can't do anything that you're not. You know, if your body wasn't able to do successful body language, it wouldn't be able to do it. I'm just asking it to do it in a different place. I'm just telling it to do it before you're successful. And you know, you can learn to do the body language of success in places where you're not usually successful, and just up your chances, up your options of being successful. I think a world where people say, well, you know, you've got to be who you are and you've got to be the authentic you, that's just another way of saying stay in your place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If nervous, be nervous. Don't get confident.
Wow.
Don't succeed.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to live in a world like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to fight against that and go, no.
As would we.
Thankfully.
Not joining in on that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mark, to close us off, I have a fun question for you. What is your favorite body language fail that you've seen maybe in the public eye that you could share with us?
Favorite body
That's
language
a good one. Wow.
Fail. Gosh. Here's the main one, and it's pretty much the reason I have a living, is that most people on the planet, when they stand up to make some kind of public speech to others, be it many people or one, when they stand up to do that, they are most likely to hang their hands down by their sides. And that is their body trying to be comfortable, and it doesn't cause their audience to be comfortable. The fail here is allowing their body to save them in an uncomfortable position by putting them into a rest, sleep, comfort mode, which is standing still with your hands down by your side. Luckily, most people on the planet haven't trained with me yet. 7.6 billion. I've got a lot to get through. Okay.
Right.
And so luckily, most people on the planet will do that. And it's that alone, I would say, that the sets the bar so low on public speaking and presenting. Wow. That people allow their bodies to save them. They allow their bodies to be authentic for that moment where their eyes look out at that audience, be it 5 or 50 or 5,000, and their mind goes, oh, you better protect yourself right now.
Right.
Just hang your hands down by your side so you're ready to run if we need to run. Don't put too much energy into this. Hang your hands down by your side just in case we fail, because then we can say, well, you know, I wasn't really trying, so probably failed because I could have succeeded, but, you know, wasn't really trying, so I failed then. Also, hang your hands down by your sides, because then we're ready to do the play dead response. All those predators out there will pass on by and they won't notice we're here because we weren't big enough. We were kind of asleep there on the stage or in front of the audience. I'm so blessed that the population of the planet do that. Without that, there'd be no need for me. They'd start doing other stuff, which is always, usually anything else, even anything else, is to more advantage than hanging your hands down by your sides. I'm also very lucky that there are some very popular presentation courses out there that actually tell people to do that.
Oh,
when it's, what do I do with my hands? They say, well, hang them down by your sides. Genius.
It's amazing that would have such an impact.
Yeah, well, they just haven't thought about it. They're literally taking the first thing that's come into their head and they've written it down as dogma.
Well,
they've never explored the other possibilities.
Yeah.
They've never tested it. They've never really gone, is this the best thing? They've gone, well, that's what we saw other people do. So that's the best thing. They've never tested
it.
Thank goodness for them.
Ignorance at its best, but it's made you who you are.
Exactly.
Other people's failure has made me what I am. Understand that. It's not who you are. It's how bad everybody else is.
I love that's it.
And really we could say the same, hopefully, about us one day.
Absolutely. As long as other people are turfing out podcasts worse than this, you're going to do just fine.
That might be tough for us, but
awesome, Mark. Christian, do you want to close us off with the last one?
All right, Mark. This is typically how we end off the show. Let's be real here. Is there anyone that you think would either have a great story or that you maybe even personally would want to see come on this show and have a conversation with us?
Oh yeah, lovely, great idea. Okay, so there's a guy who I've worked with for many, many years, great friend of mine, and actually the godfather to my daughter Stella, probably the world's best coach, has written a book, Coaching Habit, a guy called Michael Bungay Stanier. I don't know whether you've already had Michael.
Cool. No, we haven't.
No, we haven't.
Well, the reason is he's a complete failure. There's so much, so much in his life, which is just, I mean, a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean,
excellent.
You know, laudable disaster. The last book that he just sold, I think almost up to about 500,000 copies was rejected for like 5 years by people who'd already published his work.
Oh, that would be a fascinating story.
Nonsense. This is terrible. This is so he's had, so much stacked up against him. He's had a lot of advantage as well, by the way, but a whole bunch of stuff stacked up against him. Is brilliant, I think, at talking about those failures and how he's pushed through and got incredible results. So Michael Bungay Stanier.
Cool.
Heads up a company called Box of Crayons.
All right.
Check him out.
Awesome. We're definitely going to get him on.
To get on here.
We will.
Yeah.
Awesome. Mark. Okay. Mark Bowden, everybody. Truth and Lies. Where can they get it? Amazon?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm always surprised when people ask that question.
Where do you get the best margins?
Where do I get a book? Get it from Amazon. where else do you get books?
Where do you make the best margins? We'll send people there.
Well, maybe when we ask this question and the guest doesn't have it on Amazon, maybe we're trying to bait them into that huge failure.
Failed to get my book on Amazon. Right. Even people who haven't even written a book have got a book on Amazon.
It's actually true.
Yeah.
That is totally true. Yeah.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. Everybody, get the book.
Yes.
We'd love to have you on again. Always a pleasure. Had a blast. Just had a blast.
Yeah, that was fun. Thank you, Mark.
It's been great fun. It's been thanks lovely so seeing you both. I'll come on anytime.
Perfect.
Love it.
Awesome.
Cheers, guys.